But I want to get a little less detailed and talk just about the process. Again, we start with a survey of land, which describes two-dimensional boundaries. If you don't look at a lot of surveys, it's just here's the land, here's the acreage, these are the specific meets and bounds, here's a north arrow, and this is exactly what land we can identify with, you know, pins in the ground. And we start with that, and we apply the city's basic rules that give notice, that dedicate land interests to the public. We review it, and then we approve and disapprove. Laura's going to talk about the shot clock issues, the timing for the approvals, which involve articulating your reasons for disapproval in writing. And generally speaking, plat approval is a ministerial process. The city has minimum rules, or the city or the county will have minimum rules. And if you comply with those rules, you're entitled to a plat approval. And if you don't comply with those minimum standards, then you're not entitled and your plat, you know, must be denied. So it's really, it really should be, in theory, a technical engineering matter which shows compliance with the local government's minimum standards, after which you should get approved. In many places where a project is controversial and you want to cut it off at its knees, you may attack it here because there are public hearing requirements, because this is often the first permit that a government sees for the development of a project that may be controversial. And so I don't want to get into a lot of this because I think Laura's going to cover it. When I give this talk, I find that a lot of people who don't look at plats get a lot of benefit from looking at one and going over it together. And I'm going to, you know, look at the different parts of this and show you just sort of how I look at a plat when I review it. But, you know, if you've seen surveys, you might see that there's a lot of similarity here between this middle section. Do I have a pointer? Right here, which is where we would normally, you know, see surveyed land. These are lots, blocks, streets divided. And this plat is a little bit different from plats that I normally see, because this plat primarily deals with street dedication. And the reason I like to show this plat to people is because even if you routinely deal with plats, you may not look at a street dedication plat very often. And what basically is going on here is we have a layout of a subdivision, and then we have, it's blocked off, it does not have access here. And so later, what we do is we're platting just the bold line, and we're establishing a street that gives access to the neighborhood. And even that mere instrument creating access often requires a plat, depending on your jurisdiction. You know, once upon a time, you could create a street by just giving a street easement with meets and bounds, dedicating it to the public. It's accepted, improved, it's a street. A lot of jurisdictions will require you to actually plat it. It's a whole ordeal. You need to hire a surveyor or an engineer. I'm going to go over these sections individually, but we have standard language that is dictated by local governments and should be written into regulations that dictate what should go on the plat. It needs to be signed by appropriate authorities. It should be named. It should describe the land. There are certain tables here that often deal with the calls for the meets and bounds, if you're familiar with how surveys are described. And we'll have a legend, a north arrow, and a key. Let's look at each section individually. So again, from the top left here, we have an existing subdivision that provides for public access that's cut off where this bolded line begins. We see there's a bolded line that describes the boundaries of a plat. And while that may sound simple, I just got done with a litigation where the expert witness had to testify that the area within the plat is only within the bold line and not the area outside the bold line. It kind of matters because restrictions, covenants and restrictions recorded separately may apply only to the land covered by a recorded subdivision plat. And then we can argue about whether the restrictions should apply to something that's adjacent to it, next to it, impacted by it negatively. And if it isn't clear, like it wasn't with this 75-year-old plat, then we have to litigate over it. But in this case, AutoCAD makes that kind of less of an issue now. We have file clerk information showing where it's recorded so that you can find it. In theory, platting is not effective unless it is recorded. There is no real subdivision unless it's been approved for recordation. Your county clerk will often not accept a plat from you unless it's delivered by the local government and showing that's approved. We have meets and bounds locations with respect to the survey. And so that's a requirement of state law that you show where you are in the real property records. And if you didn't have information like this, your land just couldn't be identified. It would just be sort of floating, and no one would, and we would have the kind of boundary disputes that have been happening for thousands of years. And we have a one-foot reserve, which is a unique kind of creature that happens a lot in platting. And while it's sort of a small detail, it's maybe the question I get from transactional real estate attorneys the most, because they read the plat the way they would read any survey or other document, which is every single word and line and comma, and they want to know what a one-foot reserve is and how it impacts adjacent property. Although it's not something that's often used, but I'll get to that in a minute. And we have to identify easements, pipelines, and other obstacles to development. Again, this is the first two-dimensional step in laying out the land that we're going to develop. This is the block from the top left of the plat. We have dedications of streets and access easements to the public. This is, you can see it begins with the plat applicant. D.R. Horton is America's builder, right? They build these giant subdivisions, and they go and they build, you know, hundreds or thousands of lots at a time, and they have to give the streets to the public. Why? Primarily, it's because the public interest has to be paramount over...